Welcome to SRG Offscript, the podcast where experts at Succession Resource Group unpack the latest industry trends, recommendations, and observations for independent advisors managing their practice. With no fluff and a little entertainment. In each episode, we'll discuss ways in which you can understand and leverage the value of your business, grow your business through M&A, but also through an optimized organizational structure, improve and protect your business to create a sustainable enterprise that can hopefully outlast you, and lastly, preparing for your eventual retirement and how to maximize that result. So, we encourage you to listen in with whatever beverage suits your preference, and let's get to the forefront of industry trends with a fresh perspective to help you achieve your business goals. And welcome back to another episode of SRG Offscript. I am excited to have joining me here today for a part two session, and I will emphasize the first repeat guest, and I'm excited to have Ray back as my first repeat guest, Ray Sclafani of ClientWise. Now, I say Ray of ClientWise. ClientWise has grown a lot over the years that I have known Ray. It is far more than just him, but I got to tell you, they got a pretty good chief at the helm of this thing, and we've got some really good topics that I had teed up for you and I, Ray, to talk about last time. But as always, we get caught up in these things, go deeper into the topics than we necessarily plan to, but it's all good stuff. So save it for part two. So in case people somehow don't listen to part one, go back and listen to part one because it was very good, but this one isn't dependent on that. But Ray, maybe just a quick background for those who didn't hear part one on you, ClientWise, your background, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure thing. And what an honor to be back. It's a lot of fun to chat with you, and I think the audience will find our conversations of great value. I'm fortunate to have started in the financial services industry at a large asset management firm. I spent 20 years there before transitioning to become an entrepreneur and start the company ClientWise. This month, we celebrate our 18th anniversary, and I'm honored to say that I lead a terrific team. We've got 25 master certified and professional certified coaches with the International Coach Federation. We also have a couple of dozen folks helping to steer clients to ClientWise and support them while they're here. We've got marketing folks and relationship management team and operations team and the like. So we've built a pretty fun business helping advisors from a coaching and consulting perspective. We provide a fair amount of content, and we've built an online digital community called the ClientWise Exchange. We also have in-person community where folks come together in our Business Builders Academy and other coaching programs throughout the year.
Which is all in all, I think, pretty unique for what you do. And I mean, obviously not what you do, but what others do relative to you and what people think of when they think of a coach. You guys seem like you're a little bit more hands-on, far more prescriptive than just keeping people sort of accountable. Any areas of specialty that you would hang your hat on that you guys say, you know, we're the best at fill in the blank? Or are you a little bit more holistic?
That's a great question. It's funny. I think we've grown as our clients have grown, and we've met the needs of what they're looking for. I would say today, the firms we coach and have the honor of working with are really seeking to drive value for clients while also growing the value of their own businesses. And so we're helping advisors build enduring firms that are multi-generational, which requires not only great business management, but also people development. And so whether it's next gen or succession or growing the top line, knowing what the benchmarks are, so you're dropping the right amount of money to the bottom line and maximizing value. You know, Dave, we say frequently, we don't know where multiples are going to be in 3 and 5 and 7 and 10 years from now. But what we want to do is help these advisors and their teams position their businesses so when they do go to get a valuation, sell tranches and shares of their company, they maximize their exit value. And so we are relentless in the pursuit of knowing what it takes to grow enterprise value and build something enduring. And I would say that's our sweet spot.
Very cool. And I love how data-driven it sounds like you all are. I mean, that's part of building value in the practice, obviously, is understanding those KPIs, keeping an eye on them, tracking them. I think it was Peter Drucker Peter Drucker has a lot of great sayings and quotes. We had one that I'd love that I always go back to when it comes to valuation and the work that you all do, and that is what's measured improves. And I suspect, are you guys pretty quantitative in your measurements? I know there's a lot of qualitative factors.
Oh, there's a lot of qualitative factors. There are a lot of leading indicators, but then there are those, you know, quantitative factors and lagging indicators. John Doerr wrote a great book we ascribe to at ClientWise called Measure What Matters. And John Doerr, for those that don't know, was a investor in a little startup company called Google. He's a board member and he's a real leader and pioneer in helping great businesses scale and grow. And in Measure What Matters, he talks a lot about objectives and key results. So at ClientWise, we are very key result driven while also helping the owners and founders and team members of the firms we coach get clear objectives and get really focused on the right kind of plan. Don't forget, most financial advisors, Dave, are accidental owners. And the unintentional consequence of finding lots of new clients and revenue is you got to build out a team, and not all know how to do that, and we do.
Which is something that we've got teed up to talk about in a roundabout sort of way today, because yeah, you are spot on. And frankly, ending up the helm of a business is something that a lot of us have sort of accidentally stumbled into. I mean, even myself, I don't know about you, you probably had loftier ambitions than I did. But when I started Succession Resource Group, there was never a lofty ambition of building a large, robust enterprise specifically. It was more, I want to help clients. I want to help them, to your point, create sustainable enterprises. And you have one way of doing it. Ours is through the lens of succession planning, which I don't think is too far off of what you guys sort of prescribe. You're right. Yeah. I mean, it's different sides of the same coin. But you're right. I do know a lot of advisors that if you ask them, are you an advisor first or a business owner first? They're picking advisor first, and they'll pick business owner second only because you didn't give them a third option. And that's not to take anything away from their acumen or skill doing it, but it's never what they set out to do. But you're right, when they're good at it, they take great care of clients, and then you get more clients, and you got to hire somebody to help support you because you can't answer the phone and prospect and service clients. Well, now you got somebody to manage, and then you do a little bit more. That next thing you know, you got 20 people under you. Now what do? I got an actual business. I'm spending more time managing and leading and mentoring and strategy sessions than I am sitting in front of clients, which is actually what I feel really safe doing, which frankly is a good segue into my first question. And that is around sustainable growth, because I mean, you and I, before we got on, were talking about valuation and some of those key drivers. Growth is obviously a key one. I don't care what valuation company you're working with or what metrics they use, methodology, growth matters. And so as we start looking into how these firms grow, number one, so many of the firms, when we do our analysis, they'll tout that they're growing by 18%. But then you go back and you look and the markets went up that year by 18.2%. It's like, all right, well, I was kind of excited for you, but now I'm not quite so sure. And then you start breaking down, well, of the 18% that you did see, how much of that came from the founder and their relationships, their personal network? And you start realizing in a lot of cases, it's most of the growth. And so from the seat we sit in, trying to help create sustainable businesses, training and mentoring Gen 2 and Gen 3, sustainable growth, marketing, networking, COIs, I mean, that's something that I don't feel like enough firms spend enough time early on in their careers focusing on. Do you guys talk at all about, I mean, I'm sure you talk about growth, tracking those things, but sure, in terms of creating sustainable growth that the business could produce independent of the owner someday?
Well, the answer is yes. And founder-focused firms fail to scale and they don't grow sustainably. We spend a fair amount of time talking about sustainable growth. Interesting fact, according to Chip Rome at Tiburon, in the last decade, 70% of growth in RIA practices was due to market appreciation. So exactly what you just described, and it's not a surprise, you're doing all these great valuations for advisors and you see it embedded in the numbers. So what we're noticing too, and especially firms that we work with, large RIA firms who have taken on private equity and an outside capital partner, those capital partners are paying lots more close attention to the organic growth strategies of these firms. And what I'm noticing, at least in the last 18, 24 months, is a real intention to be focused around sustainable growth and growth that's not dependent upon the founder. And we're noticing that the next generation does hunt a bit different. They may not be smiling and dialing and betting a bunch on a hunch. And, you know, I was joking with an advisor recently, you know, he was telling me when he got started early on in his career, 25 years ago, he used to have two headsets that he would dial in both and switch. And it sounds like absolutely ridiculous and crazy and like hyperbolic in describing it. And he about fell out of his chair and called me and said, that was me. You're exactly right. So that game doesn't work anymore. And I guess it does for some, but it really isn't sustainable. I think if I pared it down to maybe four or five strategies that we generally help advisors think about, digital marketing is one. And it does sound silly. Most people don't think that prospective clients actually go online and look. Most advisors think they maybe get a referral or something, and then they are looked up, when we know that there are really smart digital strategies, especially some of the AI work that's being done in predictive analytics to understand, wow, look at that. Somebody's going to have a baby. Look at that. Somebody's maybe going to change a job. Look at that. Somebody's going to maybe sell a company. So the digital strategies are real. And we're noticing advisors on more podcasts, publishing blog articles, and focusing on inbound marketing, which is a term that's used. HubSpot, probably HubSpot.com, probably uses that terminology more than anybody I know, and has a fabulous online free learning platform for anybody looking to get into the SEO, search engine optimization, and anchor text tagging and the like. So digital marketing is really on the rise. I would say to any advisor, you got to be in it to win it, and it's going to take you 2 to 3 years to see real results. Don't expect overnight success. You got to get the search engines recognizing you're alive and have a pulse, and not a generic website that you update once every 6 years. The second I would say, in fact, I started with digital intentionally because I don't think advisors are thinking enough about that. And I think we're seeing every other industry explode because of digital. And advisors are late to the game and oftentimes fall back on, oh, compliance won't let me, so I can't. There are great companies out there that do fabulous work in helping advisors get started. FMG is one of those companies. The team there does a really nice job. And there's lots of great marketing companies out there. We've partnered with a number of them to help advisors do that. Digital, I started with digital intentionally because it's probably not what people come to mind, think of first.
That's so borderline cutting edge, right? I mean, frankly, I'd like you to almost unpack that one more because, I mean, I don't know if you got up to the conferences, but like when I go speak and I walk around the exhibit hall, there's maybe a company at this point, too, if I count like the White Glove that I think does some seminar stuff for advisors that's semi-digital. Like, sure. There's one or two, and I would hesitate to put them in the digital marketing category. There's what, Snappy Kraken, FMG.
Yeah, that's right.
I bump into Proudmouth occasionally at these conferences, usually speaking. They don't necessarily have a booth. They do some pretty cool stuff around podcasting. That might be it. Like, there's just not a lot.
Yeah, we have found if an advisor goes to the ClientWise website, they can get a complimentary membership to the ClientWise Exchange. And we've built a bank of thought leaders in a number of different areas in running a business, marketing being one of those. And we have found a number of good niche firms that really understand advisors that can build bespoke content. If I sort of tease it out, the generalist is going to have a tough time in the future. The specialist is going to win. Mark Hurley recently published a white paper called Welcome to the Jungle. And he talks a lot, whether you like Mark or don't like Mark, he's controversial and disruptive, but directionally, I think he's right. The generalist that's doing, you know, broad financial planning is going to get lost in the sea of sameness in the future state. You're going to see large aggregators emerge and build specialty. So if boutique firms, and there's a place for boutique firms, want to win, you've got to win by being a specialist, which means you've got to know more about my retirement plan, about my stock option plan, about my health situation, or my own unique situation to want to attract me as a client of yours. And there's great ways to do that through digital by being an expert, showing your intellectual process, showing your intellectual property, helping people understand their known needs and their unknown needs. And their unknown needs is where you add the great value. And all of that is content driven. There are a plethora of writers out there that go to your local newspaper and just see what writers write for your local paper. They're begging for extra work, side hustles. And they can write about anything. The advisor is the expert. They just need to spit out their best intellectual property ideas and get somebody else to package them. And they're off to the races. So it's not as complicated as people think and want to make it out to be. You know, membership in HubSpot.com is not terribly expensive. And they even provide online tools and training. I had an advisor who started a marketing internship program, literally was hiring kids out of the marketing department, his local university around the year. He'd put them through HubSpot training And he hired a writer on the side as an independent contractor. And he would sit in a room and spit out blog articles. The next thing you know, he's got the marketing intern publishing and tagging using HubSpot. It didn't take him much to do. Now, it takes a while to get the results because the spider's got a creepy crawl on your website and recognize what you've tagged. But the reality is digital's way to go. Web to lead forms and conversion forms and all that jazz. So there's a whole masterclass in there somewhere, I'm sure.
I know, but right? Well, and to your point, HubSpot's a great example of it, where they put out so much good content, not promoting what they do, talking about and educating around digital marketing, inbound, outbound strategies. And by virtue of you engaging with their content, well, they know you're at least in their demographic of folks. And I got to imagine advisors could be doing the same thing. I just feel like a lot of the advisors don't see this as a source of clients. You know, the high net worth clients aren't searching for me on the web.
Yeah, that's not true.
A, not true. And B, even if it isn't necessarily 100% true now, you fast forward another couple of years, I've got friends that have looked for financial advisors and eventually they asked me, but after they went and used ChatGPT to do, you know, search, they Googled it. That's how people of the next generation are finding or at least evaluating. Yeah.
Digital natives, right? And that's how they're going to find them. So I started with digital, but let me share with you a couple of more that are very sustainable. By the way, I think digital is sustainable. People get into it. But what's also sustainable is referrals. But I want to be really specific for a second. The old days of asking everybody all the time are over. What's really present, what we've noticed over the last 15 years has been very consistent. Advisors are working with fewer clients who have bigger networks and influence of those networks and who are willing to be advocates for their firm. And so many years ago, I researched and wrote a guidebook and a book around building loyal client advocates. And what we've seen is pretty consistently that when advisors build 5 to 7 relationships with client advocates who appreciate and understand what they do, who can articulate well what it is that they do, who want to be active in helping them introduce their network, and they have influence over that network, they tend to be really great partners in driving new business to the firm. And you only need 5 to 7 clients to make one introduction a quarter. And if you use $1 million as your minimum, you know, that's $25 million in net new money a year. The close ratio on those kind of advocates making introductions is way high, and you can teach a next generation professional in your firm to build relationships in that way. And the great thing is a lot of these firms have deep relationships with clients. They never have just spent the time to be intentional about this work. So the action item I would suggest is that every advisor ought to take out a client roster, stack ranked revenue per client in descending order. So your most important client by revenue per client is at the top of the list, stack down, and just go through the list and start figuring out the total relationship value of your clients. So if you look at your top 10 or 20 clients, well, look at that. Dave, you've referred me Bill and Sally and Joan and Foster. Well, look at that. 4 introductions. You pay me $10,000 a year. Each of those 4 pay me $10,000 a year. Do I treat you like a $10,000 client or a $50,000 relationship, right? So when you do that total relationship value exercise and teams institutionalize this internally, they're off to the races and generate lots of great success. So I would say loyal client advocates has got to be on the list. That's sustainable. I hear from advisors consistently that CPAs and attorneys don't work, that they don't refer. They like receiving, but not referring. While I've seen that to be true in many instances, I've also seen it to be really true that that's not true. And so there are firms, CPA firms and law firms, but I also have learned that you got to move beyond the CPA and attorney. So let's go back to that specialty. Firms of the future will specialize from a marketing perspective in being known in a particular space with a niche and where they're experts. Interestingly enough, there are other professionals who are also experts in that space. For example, if it's estimated there are $10 trillion of wealth transfer over the next decade from the sale of small businesses, then you want to be an exit planning specialist. And if you become an exit planning specialist, there are several firms across the country, one up in Boston, one in Chicago, one in Denver. They offer a certification in exit planning. You can teach a young next generation professional on your firm to go out and get that certification. They'll give you the content you need to run seminars and webinars and Zoom meetings. And oh, by the way, now you start building a network of business valuation specialists and business brokers and bankers and realtors. And the next thing you know, you've got a whole other network of people who can make introductions. So I would say if I were to pick out just a couple of two or three or four areas, you got to build a specialty, you got to think digital, you got to build advocates both in clients and professionals.
And I got to imagine the evangelist one, you know, getting those referrals from your client advocates is likely to kind of have a spiderweb effect that if you've got 5 to 7 really good clients that they love what you do for them, they shout your praises from the roof, and then they refer you, to your point, a client or two per quarter because they were eager to share the message with people that they care about, they're likely to be referring you clients of semi-like type,
right,
style, personality, yeah, in which case then you might hit it out of the park with one or two of those, which then also become sort of evangelists for the organization. And all of a sudden you start to pick
over
up some momentum.
Over. That's right. Yeah. And that's sustainable, right?
Right.
That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, 100%. I love the angle on those other COIs because you and I both know if you ask 100 advisors, write down when you think of COIs, who are you thinking of? They're not putting down real estate or commercial real estate agents or valuation experts. They're putting down attorney, estate mm-hmm. planning attorney, CPA.
That's it.
That's it.
That's right. And then claim it doesn't work.
On the CPA side, I do get it because it does seem like there's a real talent shortage there, where they're just bogged down. Like we've had trouble sometimes selling tax practices because nobody wants the additional work. They don't have the bodies.
Yeah.
So now you start hitting them up for referrals and it's like, I can barely keep my head above water now.
Well, with CPAs and attorneys in particular, the other thing that I've learned coaching advisors is you've got to look for the professionals that are seeking to grow their businesses. So if you're a CPA and you've got more work than you have capacity to deliver, the last thing you're doing is looking for new clients. But if you're a large accounting firm in a city where you've got a dedicated business development team or you've got a couple of partners in the firm, they're out looking for new business too. There's an opportunity so long as you network with the right professional seeking to grow her or his business.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you said it a couple of times earlier, and that is the professional persistence. Like this isn't like a 6 month, 12 month thing, and then see how the digital marketing works or see how the referral network works. These things work, period. It might take you 6 months. It might take you 18 months. But they work. Like these are not new strategies that Ray drew up on the whiteboard yesterday that he's encouraging you all to try. Like Succession Resource Group does all of these things. They work. We have a marketing strategy. We have 6 or 7 different channels. We are trying to keep all those plates spinning at all times, which is where then when we see the valuation work coming in and you get these advisory practices that, I mean, they're great practices, great clients, an amazing client experience. And then you look at their P&L and you see their marketing line item and there's zero, or I can't find the category. Like, I can't find your marketing budget. Where's it at? And they said, what do you mean? Oh, we just get referrals. Like, I mean, to be fair, you have done an amazing job getting to where you are through just referrals, but it's that old saying, and there's a book on it, what got you here won't get you there. Right, exactly. So to get to $1 million in revenue, to $5 million in revenue, it's just a different skill set that it's going to take to get from 5 to 10. So I love talking about the sustainable growth because you and I both know, when we get to the succession conversation, and we both play a role in that space. So we have these conversations with Gen 1, with Gen 2 and 3. The constant complaint we hear, and fairly in some cases from Gen 1, is Gen 2 can't sell. Gen 2 doesn't want to sell. Gen 2 shouldn't have to sell. If Gen 1 has done their job, Gen 2, Gen 3 should be able to take the firm to the next level through the sustainable growth engines that Gen 1 has hopefully created, mentored, and trained. I'll get off my soapbox.
No, that's a good soapbox. I might gently push back just a little bit because I'm in full agreement that firms of the future need to institutionalize three things. They need to institutionalize their brand. They need to institutionalize how they go about serving clients, advising clients, and they need to go about institutionalizing their business development and rainmaking activities. So I'm in agreement with you. They need to build a marketing machine that's a lead generation, just spitting out leads. I'm in agreement with you. And nobody wants to buy a business that isn't growing. And so if you're going to be a next gen professional, gen two, gen three, gen four, we've got some firms we're working on gen four, gen five now. Man, you don't want to be a buyer taking out a loan to invest in a closely held business that doesn't grow. And so I do think that founders and controlling owners today need to attract and develop individuals in their organization who are excellent at generating business and know how to close and win business. So there's three parts of the business development. I want to break this down because I think what you've said is right. I want to push a little bit. There's a difference between lead generation, closing and winning the business, and then serving the client, building and deepening the relationship so it yields additional referrals and business. Well, I do think firms should institutionalize their lead generation machine, but I do think NextGen needs to know how to close and win business and know how to grow the firm. So it's a little bit of a splitting hairs, but I do think that founders and controlling owners today are oftentimes a little quick to dilute their position and sell equity and sell shares to individuals that don't know how to grow the firm. I think controlling owners and founders need to be really selective at identifying those next gen professionals that are going to be owners in the company who know how to grow the business.
Agreed. As always, reading from the same script. So let's say hypothetically, Ray, they do all these things. They're ramping up digital marketing, providing an amazing client experience. So you know, business is finding them, they're growing, they're hiring, they're training, they're mentoring. I think there's probably two really difficult transitions that advisors in particular have in the course of their career. The first one is for those that start at a wirehouse, a bank channel, and they decide to talk to their spouse, talk to the rest of their family, their professional network, and they make the harrowing leap to being an independent advisor, independent business owner. Burn the boats. We're starting a business. That's probably not what their intention is. I'm going to go independent and I'm going to do my thing, hang up my shingle. So that's hard. That's not easy. Lots have done it, but that doesn't make it any easier. And then they get to a point where they found themselves with a lot of success and a lot of clients and then a staff under them that they're mentoring and training because you have to. And all of a sudden, I got a lot of spinning plates doing a lot more work on the business than I am in the business as an advisor. And they get to that next inflection point that some embark on, some intentionally shy away from, and that is the transition from advisor to CEO. And to me, I think that is the most important inflection point. I mean, we got to have the business start, to be fair. But after that, once you transition to being a full-time or mostly full-time CEO, A, having done it myself, B, having talked to numerous advisors that have done it, and then obviously lots that have not, the advisors on the other side that have made the transition, I mean, it seems like they have a really awkward like 12 to 18 months as they get out of the client work and trying to figure out, well, now that I have 30, 40 hours per week free, what exactly does a CEO do? Because you know, they had training and mentoring and licensing to get their CFP and their Series 7. They grow up figuring out what it is to be an advisor. Nowhere did we get training to be a CEO. And so then all of a sudden they find themselves now being a full-time CEO. And I would tell you, it's 24, 36 months later, their calendar is full and it is the highest and best use of their time. And they're looking back on what they used to do, thinking, how did I ever do all of this? What are your thoughts? I mean, you probably have clients. You either guided through that process, guided them, steered them away from it, maybe if they don't really want to be a CEO. How do you guide people through that process?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do think there's one other transition right before FA to CEO that helps them understand whether CEO is right for them. And what we've observed, and maybe you can confirm this data, this would be interesting. We've observed that about $3.5 million in gross revenue, there's a need for professional management, that the firm is large enough in scope and size. It starts bubbling over 8 or 9 or 10 people. And now you need some kind of organizational structure and somebody's got to kind of run the operation. Some advisors go out and hire a director of operations or maybe even a COO, a chief of operations. Maybe they start with a chief people officer or a director of HR. But at about $3.5 million, they start deploying capital into professional management. So for the first time in their career, they were wearing all the hats and they were advisor, running the operation, setting the vision, hiring people, firing people, developing people, and mostly were advisors and support people. And still they were the primary rainmaker, primary advisor. But at that $3.5 million, they for the first time say, hey, I'm going to keep my client work. I'm going to maybe step away from some of the running the business thing. Maybe I'll hang on to finance, but I don't want to do as much HR. Like when they're at that moment making that decision, there are five functions of that operational role. It's the HR work. It's certainly compliance and tech. It's finance. And it's the operations, workflows, and all that jazz. The tech stack thing, they kind of get by. The compliance thing, they know what they have to do. They've been doing it long enough. They hold on tight to the finance, and that leaves the HR and the operations. At that moment, we always ask advisors who are thinking about the launch into CEO and shedding client accounts. The question I always ask is, tell me about the decision you made to add professional management. What parts of professional management did you hold on to? What parts of professional management did you want to let go of? If the CEO transition doesn't include developing people, then they're probably not right to move into that CEO spot. If the transition to CEO wasn't about really getting into the nitty-gritty around the numbers and the P&L and understanding exactly what the drivers are of enterprise value, you know, the CEO is going to have responsibility to other stakeholders and shareholders. So they're going to answer to a board eventually if they're getting large enough in scope and size. So you better be great at developing people. You better be able to great at dancing around a balance sheet and a P&L. And you sure as heck better be good at thinking strategically and setting vision and really inspiring others toward that vision. Like that, I agree with you. It's a huge leap. But what I've noticed is many advisors, you know, when they started hiring professional management, what they did was they cheated. They focused first on, oh, great, this'll create more time in my day so I can see more clients. If they're not committed to retaining some of that responsibility and outsourcing some of the management that'll make the firm more operationally efficient and create capacity, well, then maybe the CEO job isn't really for them. But I've mentioned a few things I think the CEO needs to be thinking about. The other is they have to be sort of the leader of the pack in terms of driving business for the firm. They've got to be front and center, not just setting vision and strategy and developing people and understanding the finances and reporting to the board and stakeholders and the like, but they've got to be a real champion for the company, inspiring others to be joiners to the company, inspiring others in the company, inspiring clients and prospective clients to be joiners to their company. So it's a big job. It's a big role. We often challenge advisors pretty quick. And we ask one simple question and it's, okay, how quick can you get down to 20 clients? And if they freak out, like there's no chance I'm going to do that, Ray, then the answer is probably CEO's not right for you. Because you don't want to go run the operation. You're probably not going to build investment portfolios. You're not going to be the firm's primary planner or portfolio manager. What are you going to do? You want to sit strategy, build and run the firm and take it to the next level? I think that's a really important getting people to think about, hey, what if you got down to 20 clients? What would you do? Would you enjoy these aspects of the role?
Right. And I've talked to folks that vehemently did not want to be the CEO of the organization. And they try to bring somebody from the outside in, and that person just doesn't have the passion. They don't have the vision where they saw this thing going. And all of a sudden, by default, you're left picking up that torch, which, again, I think about then that advisor, even with, let's say, those 20 clients that they're still servicing. Most end up servicing more than that for a while, and we try to get them, to your point, to sort of be aware of it and ramp down, or at least we talk about it. You probably try to actually help them do it. I just present on why this is such an important thing, because I'll pick on you. I mean, how often do you sit down in a 8-10 hour day? Or I mean, you and I both know being an entrepreneur, you get to work any 18 hours a day you want. But let's say during the normal 8-hour workday, how many hours of the 8-hour workday is Ray sitting in front of folks actually coaching at this point?
So I have to tell you, I love being in the trenches. I absolutely love running workshops. I still do enjoy working with really successful CEOs running large super ensembles. And so I still am in the game. What I've chosen to do is hire a team around me who are really good at running the firm. And so I've got an amazing chief of operations, an amazing chief of our coaching services, got a terrific chief program developer. So I've got a really excellent team. And so for me, and I think this may be a good example for advisors, you can build the organization around what your passion and love is too. Doesn't mean you don't have to deal with succession. That's still a big key, right? So we're all, as entrepreneurs, going down this path and through this journey. But I would encourage advisors to build the firm that your clients are interested in, build the firm that your team wants to be owners of, and find the thing that you love, the passion that you love, and start now to build a step-down plan. One of the things we're doing in our Business Builders Academy is we're talking to advisors about their 2024 step-down plan. What will you step down from this year and allow others to begin to step up into? And just don't delegate the tasks. Delegate the authority. Delegate outcomes. As you're stepping down, make a punch list of 5 or 10 clients this year maybe you're going to step down from and somebody else in your organization is going to step up. Make a list of the 3 to 5 things, one thing each quarter. In 2024, you're not going to do in January of 2025. And I've been doing that consistently for a decade.
Well, that's why I pick on you as the example, because I know we've got common clients and I know you are still occasionally at your choosing client facing and directly involved with a lot of these folks, but you still have the ability with your team to run the enterprise. And I hate seeing advisors who I know the value they provide to their clients, to their community, and I know what they would be capable of doing within their team if only they had the time. And instead, they get tied up spending time sitting in front of clients, and they do it because I think it's a safe space. I get it. I mean, it's the same way for me. It's probably the same for you. I don't have to go prep to get on a succession or valuation call. Give me 5 minutes and I'm ready to go. It could be $1 million team. It could be $50 million team. I've done this long enough. It is a very safe space. The problem is, I feel like for advisors, and I'm curious your opinion on this, I go back to when I talk to every business owner, client service versus being the CEO, what is your highest and best use of time? What's the thing in the firm that only you can do? And to me, the mentoring and training, duplicating yourself, replicating yourself, creating other junior versions of yourself. Like, there's nobody else in the team that could create another Ray, for example. So anytime that Ray is doing other stuff than duplicating and replicating his skill set is maybe not wasted time, but it feels underutilized.
Yeah. It my experience has been it takes 2 to 3 professionals to replace a founder, and it takes 5 to 7 years to develop that next gen. So sooner, getting started sooner than later is really key. I had a really good friend of mine. He was one of the greatest advisors ever. In fact, he was a ranked advisor back many, 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 many years ago. He was at E.F. Hutton when R.J. Shook was first starting the rankings. His name was Harold Rubin. Harold has since passed away. He was a mentor of mine and somebody I loved and cared for dearly. He was my running buddy. We used to run 5 days a week together. Harold was always filled with these pearls of wisdom. He challenged me. He said, always surround yourself with people 20 years younger than you and 10 years younger than you. I thought, man, that's a kind of a crazy thought, Harold. You know, at the time, I was 33, 34, 37. I'm like, Harold, you know, I'm around kids, you know, my kids' age, you know, but he says, no, as you get older, you're going to stay young and you're going to find that the next generation is faster, quicker, smarter. And the more you can be surrounded by those young people, your team will be better, your firm will be better, you'll provide career paths for people. And I didn't quite get it till I think I hit about 50. And I remember thinking to myself, man, Harold's right. Like, it's really smart to have people in their 40s and their 30s and 20s running the show. I was talking to my niece who's in the Army. She's being deployed this Saturday. She came up a couple of days to spend with us. And she was describing to me like all of the training and the operations and how young these kids are. And you stop and you think about our great military. You and I are having this conversation as entrepreneurs in the greatest country on the planet because somebody else made a decision to fight for our freedom. And there are people that will come in front of us that'll do the same. There are people in harm's way today. There are those veterans who have passed away and POWs who, or those even missing in action. And we think about the sacrifice that those folks made. And I think about the 19 and 20-year-olds and how capable they were protecting and defending our country. And then I hear advisors say, yeah, I don't know if I want to have an internship program. It's too much work. Or I don't know that I want to hire a kid right out of college. Like, what experience do they have? What do they know? But man, you hire these young kids out of college at 21, 23, you build a great internship program. The next thing you know, you've got rock stars in your company that are like moving three times as fast. They don't need seven courses in HubSpot. They already know how to use it because it runs like every other program they're using. I think looking into that next generation and being surrounded by youthful folks as much as you can, the better off your firm's going to be. Hopefully that's helpful. I don't know if I went on too much of a tangent, but.
No, I love hearing that. And it's because we say the same thing. But again, we say it sort of from the ivory tower of looking down on the business, doing succession planning, valuation work, where we're not giving recommendations. We're merely identifying areas where they could be improved or areas of strength already, not solutions to go fix those things. Whereas that's exactly what you guys do, which is why I think we work so well in tandem. But you said a couple of things there. Number one, you talked about, you know, America is the greatest country. Reminds me of my favorite show, Newsroom, with I think it's Jeff Daniels. So if you're listening, you haven't watched it. It's only like three seasons. I wish they'd have kept it going longer. It's one of my favorite shows of all time.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Where do I find it? Check it out. Just like Apple TV, it's streaming at this point, but it is, you watch episode one and you will either love it or hate it. I mean, you can't hate it. It's an amazing show. So anyway,
that's awesome.
Newsroom, Jeff Daniels, you'll love it. Number two is you talked about the interns, and what would you say to the advisor? Because I have had this come up, not in response to anything I've said, but I've heard it said in workshops that I'm at where people are reluctant to bring in that younger talent out of college because those folks, they expect a salary and they will... They're just a drain on the firm. They're an expense. They don't contribute anything for years. And I hear that and it just makes me sort of want to cringe. How do you address that? Because I mean, it is an expense and they're not wrong. Initially, not only is it an expense, it also consumes time to mentor and train and shadow, and you get nothing in return year one, year two, probably.
I don't know about that. I think that where firms really fail is by not designing really excellent onboarding strategies and training strategies, and maybe don't document that as well as they need to. And what we do here at ClientWise is when we bring on a new young next gen, in fact, we just started somebody Monday in a relationship management position, and we give them two assignments right up front. One is, hey, when you go through this process, you're going to have to make the training program better. So as you go through the process, write down the things that aren't working for you or what you read that really made sense and what didn't make sense. So you're going to have to improve the training program. And the second thing is you got to learn the job, you know, and use the training materials and the mentors. You got to have a buddy. You got to have a mentor. They're different. You know, I'm a scuba diver. I'm a master certified scuba diver and a rescue diver certified. And you have a buddy for a reason. You can see them. They don't go far from you. And they're there to help you. You can ask stupid questions to the buddy. And then you've got a mentor, somebody who's in the job, in the role, with experience, who can be a different kind of guide than your buddy in the company. So if you got a buddy, you got a mentor, you got a good written comprehensive training program that's well documented, and you've got people with an attitude wanting to make things better, man, you're going to get results out of people right away.
And honestly, building that farm team of talent, even if it does take a year or two to start seeing some results, I promise by year three and four, if you keep this cycle going, you're going to have your peers looking at you thinking, where does he keep getting all this talent from?
That's right. Oh, and those young people, they refer people back to you too. You know, they've got their own little networks. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's like, man, ClientWise, that place, SRG, that's a great place to work. I want to work at SRG. And they're bringing their friends to work. It's a pretty good opportunity. Talent's going to be maybe another episode we can talk about the great talent race, the arms race for talent, because it's here to stay. And COVID really flattened the landscape there. And finding talent's going to be tricky in the future. So you got to always be recruiting, just like you're always looking for clients. But different episode for different day, I'm sure.
Well, to your point, yeah, relying on recruiting or relying on recruiters to come solve your talent shortage is, I don't think it's sustainable. It to me is like relying on referrals to grow your enterprise. You could do it. But when everyone else has all these other channels plus that, you're going to have a tough time keeping up.
That's right. I agree.
So, and I know you got to run here soon. How much time do you have left, Ray? Should we hit the remote work thing?
Yeah, I think we're probably out of time for the remote work thing, but maybe we'll come back to it for another occasion.
Yeah, no, you're good. I appreciate you carving out time. And frankly, I wanted to spend the time on the big chunky stuff that we had here initially. So folks, hopefully you all listening beyond my TV show recommendations have just had a masterclass in building a more valuable business. Frankly, I know that wasn't our modus operandi, but talking about sustainable growth engines and Ray getting real specific on the digital marketing, the referrals from those evangelists in your existing network, COIs, and going beyond the basics. I mean, these are things that legitimately, they'll also make you more revenue in the meantime, get you more clients, which is always a good thing. But it also builds more value on the back end. And at today's multiples, 2.5, 3.5 times top line, 8 to 12 times earnings. I mean, every new client that, you know, client-wise's strategies help bring you, and they add so much more value to the firm long-term plus short-term. Just seems a real win. So hopefully you guys got some value out of what Ray shared. Ray, if they happen to have wanted a little bit more from you and your team, where would they find that?
Just head to clientwise.com. You can sign up for a complimentary membership to the ClientWise Exchange or give us a buzz at 800-732-0876.
All right. Well, Ray, pleasure as always. I have a feeling we'll have to do this again here soon, but I wish you well. Thanks for carving out some time for us and our listeners.
Yeah, thanks. And thanks for your good work in our industry. It's making a difference and it's fun to work with you.
Likewise. Back at you, buddy. Have a good one. And that concludes another episode of SRG Offscript. We hope you found this episode both interesting and valuable. We encourage you to check out our website at successionresource.com or, of course, connect with us on social for the latest happenings at SRG. If you just can't get enough of SRG Offscript, we invite you to join our monthly Q&A webinar, SRG Offscript Live, where we address your questions sparked by the latest podcast topic. Finally, if you enjoyed today's episode as much as we did recording it, please leave us a review and tell your industry friends about us. Your support helps us continue to bring you the best content possible. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Succession Resource Group. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice. Always seek the advice of an expert with any questions you may have. As always, we at SRG stand ready to help when you're ready.